Hello, welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa bringing you the News Gazette on this Wednesday, May 7th, 2025. Today on the front page, there's a large picture with the heading, Dream Come True. It's an experience from Champaign-Urbana about the Brilliant Spirit Awards. And there's a picture of Irene Macedo as she talks to a customer at one of the three La Paloma food trucks she owns. By Luke Taylor. La Paloma food truck owner loves to feel part of the community. For Irene Macedo, opening La Paloma was a move toward independence and working for herself, but that didn't mean leaving family behind. Family, including her brother, helped to build the first food truck and the name itself, which translates to the Dove, in her memory of her grandmother. When Macedo's grandmother passed, she was unable to attend the funeral because of travel expenses and her young children. I had a dream later, maybe 3 years, 4 years later, when she asked me to release two doves somewhere. She told me the place, but I couldn't go. So I said, I'm going to name the food truck in her name, Macedo said. Everybody says, why La Paloma? Why does that have to be with food? What does that have to do with food? Behind the name, that is the story. 7 years later, Macedo's passion for her business and care for her employees and customers will be recognized with a Brilliant Spirit Award today during Experience Champaign-Urbana annual Toast to Tourism celebration. In those 7 years, La Paloma has literally tripled in size, with the third truck opening in 2023. When she got started, Macedo had never owned a business, but she was comfortable with the many of the day-to-day operations of running a restaurant after working as a general manager at a fast food restaurant. I learned the kitchen, I learned service, I learned management, and I ended up as GM, but I wasn't seeing the move up from there, Macedo said. Macedo brought that business and customer service experience to La Paloma, and her husband, Gerardo Serrano, brought his cooking expertise. Macedo's secret to loving working with her spouse, La Paloma talks stay at the truck, so at home it's all about spending time together and with the kids. The first 2 years the food truck was open, Macedo was essentially running it by herself. When the pandemic hit, she lost all of her employees. She really was working by herself, which meant hours had to be reduced. I would open sometimes in the morning, sometimes at night. I used to come here on campus near the Red Lion. That helped me to stay open, Macedo said. She would park near the bar late at night to catch people looking for a bite as they left. Serrano returned home from California when he had been attending formal chef training and encouraged her that the business would survive through the pandemic. Sure enough, they started receiving calls asking to serve food at events, from company parties to graduations all over the state. As they traveled and the requests kept coming in, La Paloma needed to be in multiple places at once. So Paloma 2 and later Paloma 3 were born. It feels really good because we cook what we would cook at home. Expanding the growing has allowed La Paloma to switch over to more and more fresh ingredients rather than relying on as many canned goods. Every morning we have to chop veggies, cook things all from scratch, everything and every day, Macedo said. Despite the mobile nature of the business and its multiple locations, Macedo said that they've gotten to know loyal customers, both those who hire La Paloma for events and those who seek the truck out for individual meals. She could think of one individual who was her first customer nearly every day on campus. Her husband told him he was nominated to be number one customer. I'm so shy. So talking to more people, actually learning more English, making friends, it feels great, Macedo said. It feels great because they make me feel part of this community. And there's also a picture of Irene Macedo as she's checking what's needed for a customer's order at one of the trucks inside of the kitchen there with her husband, Gerardo Serrano. And with that article, there's a small insert where it talks about the five community members who will be honored with the Brilliant Spirit Awards during the Experience Champaign-Urbana's annual Toast to Tourism celebration set for tonight at the Hilton Garden. And those five people are Laura Rainey, who works at the Comfort Suites in Urbana, Ruthie Harper for Ion Grove Cafe, at the Cafe Willard Airport, Irene Macedo, La Paloma Food Truck, Jan Seeley, Christie Clinic, Illinois Marathon, and John Stevens, Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. Also on the front page from the Champaign County Court, prosecutor, stabber thought wife was cheating. Victim's son called 911 at his mother's urging by Luke Taylor. The call that alerted law enforcement to a stabbing Sunday night came from the victim's son, who dialed 911 after hearing his mother call out to him while he spoke on the phone with his father. Rafael Magdaleno Mendoza, 51, of Urbana, has been charged with attempted murder, aggravated domestic battery, and two counts of aggravated criminal sexual assault after allegedly stabbing his wife. According to his wife, the victim, he believed that she was sleeping with a female co-worker. Assistant State's Attorney Eileen Keeley said that the couple's son had called his mother, but his father picked up the phone. In the background, he could hear his mother yelling to call 911. Champaign County Sheriff's deputies responded to the residence on Girth Drive in Urbana Township at 8:01 p.m. on Sunday. Magdaleno Mendoza answered the door and told them that his wife was sick in the bedroom down the hall, Keeley said. Officers asked what she was dealing with, and he said it was something to do with her chest. Keeley said that as the deputies went down the hall, they passed the bathroom and saw a large amount of blood in the shower and on the floor. When they entered the bedroom, they saw the victim lying on the floor covered in blood. She was nude but partly covered by a blanket. A man later determined to be her son was kneeling next to her holding a towel to her chest, Keeley said. A deputy took over and saw that the woman had a large, deep puncture wound just above her right breast. She spoke in Spanish as her son translated and said that her husband had stabbed her. She was transported to the hospital where further lacerations were found on her wrist and palm. Officers were able to further interview the victim before and after surgery, when she continued to say that her husband was the one who stabbed her. She said Magdaleno Mendoza told her he would kill her so that she couldn't be with someone else and came to her with a kitchen knife. He allegedly stabbed her hand before stabbing her in the chest, causing her to fall to the ground. After this, the victim said Magdaleno Mendoza told her that he was going to kill the female co-worker he believed her to be having an affair with, and then kill himself. Keeley said the victim described being nice in an attempt to calm her husband down after he stabbed her in the chest and he began to perform oral sex on her, which she did not consent to. Eventually, she said she was able to crawl out of the bathroom and into the bedroom. Magdaleno Mendoza told police that he was not at home at the time of the stabbing and that he returned after buying groceries to find his wife in the bathroom. He said that he moved her to the bedroom and then changed clothes because police were on the way and he did not want to look as if he had attacked her. He stated that he wasn't upset because he thought she was cheating on him with a woman, Keeley said. Deputies reported he appeared intoxicated and smelled of alcohol. Magdaleno Mendoza's license plate did not appear on the automated license plate readers in the area at the time he claimed to be grocery shopping. The state has requested Magdaleno Mendoza to be detained until trial. The hearing on that matter has been set for Wednesday morning, and Champaign County Judge Brett Olmstead ruled that he be held at least until that hearing. If convicted of aggravated battery, Magdaleno Mendoza could face 3 to 7 years in prison or be sentenced to a fine of up to $25,000. One of the counts of aggravated sexual assault has a mandatory sentence of 10 to 30 years if he's convicted, while the other and the attempted murder charge each have a possible sentence of 6 to 30 years. Also on the front page, a piece by Bob Asmussen with the title CU's Loss Will Be Atlanta's Gain. From Champaign. For more than 35 years, Benita Gollins Ray has poured her heart and soul into making Champaign-Urbana a better place. Be it as an Urbana school board member, a volunteer at Champaign's Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, or in her role as mobile crisis coordinator at Rosecrans, Rollins Gay has made a difference and been someone that you'd want on your side. What makes her special? Her gift of service, her mothering, loving, compassionate personality, and attitude toward everyone, longtime friend Lee Kelly said. The homeless, the mentally ill, whether you're in pursuit of your education, she has never closed her door to anyone who has needed help in any capacity. as her time in CU is winding down. She will soon relocate to the Atlanta area. Rollins Gay's accomplishments are being celebrated Friday night at Champagne's Holiday Inn with a combination retirement birthday party. More than 200 guests, including local dignitaries, are expected to attend. It will be a chance for a collective thank you from the community as Rollins Gay moves closer to her son, Javarius, a successful restaurant owner. How does Kelly feel about her friend's pending departure? I have mixed emotions, she said. Of course, sadness to know that she won't be as close in proximity, but happy that she's starting this next chapter of her life and she gets to enjoy her children, her grandchildren, and just do the things that make her happy. Rollins Gay will continue to help others, only in a different area code. Understand that she will be doing there the same things she does here, Kelly said. Our loss is Atlanta's gain. Rollins Gay is looking forward to the fresh start and warmer winters. I'm going to miss everybody, she said. Rosecrans has been like my family. A big fan. Kelly first got to know Rollins Gay while Kelly was a student at the University of Illinois. She was volunteering at the Don Moyers Boys and Girls Club, and that's where she met Rollins Gay's son. She used to come in, Kelly said. The relationship just blossomed. Kelly later worked with Rollins Gay at a woman's place. She's just been a powerhouse in my life, Kelly said. I would call her a mentor, a second mother, an advocate. She has just been all those things that a person should be when they want to help, guide, and direct and see you succeed. You don't find genuine people like Benita anymore. Rollins Gay's combination of work ethic and empathy is her superpower. I've seen her advocate for jobs for people, Kelly said. I've seen her use her resources to help people further their careers, their education, anything that they've needed. It's part of her genetic makeup. Kelly describes Rollins Gay as an older Jasmine Crockett, referring to the charismatic Texas congresswoman. She pulls no punches, Kelly said. Kelly currently serves as the regional HR business partner for Rosecrans. Kelly would like to see an honorary street designated in Urbana or Champaign for Rollins Gay in the near future. I'm going to push for this to see if we can make it happen, Kelly said. She deserves it. Origin story. Rollins Gay was born in Champaign, the daughter of Francis and Thomas C. Rollins, who was stationed at Rantoul's Chanute Air Force Base. Her dad suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder after a decorated military career. Veterans are really in my heart, she said. When you've got a dad who has been in three wars and he's hollering at night, it makes a difference. Rollins Gay graduated from Central State University in Ohio with a degree in comprehensive business education. She then earned her master's degree in education at Wright State University. She earned a master's in social work from the University of Southern California. After college, Rollins Gay was a business teacher for almost two decades in Dayton, Ohio. Benita married Robert Gay. The couple had three children, son Javarius and daughters Jasmine and Jonte. Robert passed away in 1989 in Dayton. Rollins Gay brought her kids back to CU after her husband's death. My dad helped me raise the children, Rollins Gay said. My goal was keep those grades up and you're going to college, which they all did. She spent 1 year as a truancy administrator for Urbana Schools. She later went to work for what is now Rosecrans, where she has been for 28 years. As part of her duties, Rollins Gay trained area police departments on how to answer crisis lines. I love that, Rollins Gay said. She recruited students from the University of Illinois to answer the crisis line. Rollins Gay has mentored and oversaw students who are now in social work, community health, and psychology. She spent a year at Parkland College and has also been a senior tax analyst for more than two decades. And she helped with the local Children's First program. Lots of hats. Rollins Gay is a longtime member of the Champaign Bethel AME Church. In 2005, Rollins Gay was elected to the Urbana School Board, where she has served until 2019. She doesn't mince words about her time with the board. I've been to hell and back, she said. I had to fire a superintendent. I got in the midst of a whole bunch of stuff. But we had a good board. We all worked together. We didn't battle against each other. And there's a picture of Benita Rollins Gay and her best friend, Del Elaine Owens. They're collecting bread and other goods from Schnucks each Saturday for the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen. Let's go now to J. Mark Powell with his Holy Cow History, with the title Whipping Inflation 1974 Style, and a picture at the top of Gerald Ford with his button that says Win. Sounds like a news story snatched from today's headlines. These words came from a news article, all right, the November 17th, 1974 New York Times. And the news story that's included starts out saying, the wholesale price index, precursor of what's coming on the consumer front, had gone up a staggering 2.3% last month. That brought the wholesale price increase over the last year to 22.6%, the highest rate in a quarter century, and nearly double the climb in family living costs. A little more than 50 years ago, America was in the same economic boat as it is today. The phrase runaway inflation entered the nation's vocabulary as retail prices rose, then rose some more, then rose yet again. Even worse, it seemed there was no end in sight. Inflation had arrived, put down roots, and decided to stay a while. In time, ever-increasing prices led to the birth of yet another phrase, the misery index. It combined the rates of inflation and unemployment to catalog the harm both were inflicting on Americans. Politicians are hypersensitive to economic unpleasantry, with trust in government severely eroded by the twin debacles of the Vietnam War and Watergate. It seemed Washington wasn't up to the task of fighting a serious foe on the financial front. Then the only president who was ever elected to the presidency had an idea. We could beat inflation by wearing buttons. No, seriously, he did. Gerald Ford was D.C.'s original Mr. Nice Guy. A star college football player at Michigan and a World War II veteran, he was elected to Congress in 1948, rising through Republican ranks and eventually becoming House Minority Leader in 1965. His dream was to end his career as Speaker, but with Democrats firmly entrenched on Capitol Hill, that looked unlikely. Indeed, the GOP wouldn't reclaim the House until 1994. Ford seemed destined to spend his days being just another guy in a gray flannel suit. Then fate stepped in when President Richard Nixon's running mate Spiro Agnew resigned due to sleaziness from his previous tenure as governor of Maryland. Ford was chosen as the new vice president. When Nixon was forced to walk the plank over Watergate, fate smiled once more on Ford. Initially well-liked by public and pundits alike, Ford's popularity took a serious hit when he pardoned his predecessor for any crimes Nixon may have committed while in office. His approval ratings were racing down just as rapidly as inflation was driving prices up. Barely 60 days into office, Ford knew he had to act fast to keep his presidency from skidding into the ditch, which is where the win buttons enter our story. When October 1974 began, the new president kicked off his campaign to enlist everyday Americans in the fight to beat inflation. He asked them to send him their 10 suggestions for ways to stop rising prices. This was long before David Letterman's top 10 comedy list, remember? He followed that up with a gimmick. As he spoke to a joint session of Congress on October 8th, many Americans expected to learn details of his plans for beating back higher prices. But when they turned on their TV sets that night, they saw their president wearing a bright red button with WIN in bold capital letters. It was an acronym, Ford explained, and that stood for Whip Inflation Now. He tried to resurrect the spirit of public support that had made the war effort so successful during World War II, some 30 years earlier. He encouraged all Americans to wear WIN buttons as a sign of solidarity. However, baby boomers and their greatest generation parents alike were not in the mood to sacrifice. Hitler and Hirohito weren't lurking offshore this time. Americans saw their hard-earned dollars going to faceless big businesses and corporations, and they wanted Washington to stand up for them rather than grow gardens and carpool, as Ford suggested. Economists politely pointed out such baby steps by the public would barely make a dent in inflation. Comedians had a field day. They drew big laughs by wearing the button upside down and explaining NIM, which is win backwards, stood for No Immediate Miracles. The Whip Inflation Now campaign died a quick death, killed off by a combination of guffaws and indifference. Win buttons quietly went the way of the Edsel, New Coke, and other classic marketing Hindenburgs. You can still find them for sale on eBay and in antique stores, but you'd better grab one fast. With inflation back, their price will be going up soon. And from Springfield, an article about the 2026 election, Kelly joins Democratic primary to fill Durbin's Senate seat, by Ben Zielinski. U.S. Representative Robin Kelly is the second Democrat to step into the 2026 primary, the primary race to succeed U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. Kelly, who is a resident of South Suburban Madison, has represented Illinois' 2nd Congressional District since 2013 and recently served a short stint as chair of the Democratic Party of Illinois. This moment requires proven leaders who have had the experience to take on the toughest battles, Kelly said. I've never backed down, not from gun lobbyists, not from MAGA extremists, and certainly not from a fight for what is right. Kelly won a crowded 16-person primary at a 2013 special election to fill the congressional seat vacated by former U.S. Representative Jesse Jackson, who resigned while under investigation for misuse of campaign funds and eventually went to prison. Kelly received more than half the primary vote before easily winning the special election. Kelly currently represents one of Illinois' most geographically diverse congressional districts. The 2nd District stretches from the south side of Chicago, more than 100 miles south to Danville, and also includes Rantoul, Gibson City, Hoopston, Paxton, Tilton, and Westville, among other area towns. Kelly also served 2 terms in the Illinois House and unsuccessfully ran for state treasurer in 2010. As a member of Congress, Kelly has focused much of her time on health care and gun violence issues. In a video launching her campaign, Kelly reflected on the time she refused to stand for a moment of silence in the U.S. House following a mass shooting. And the next time someone else sat down with me, Kelly said, and then another, until a moment of silence felt more like an echo of inaction. Kelly joins Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton in the race. Stratton has already received endorsements from Governor J.B. Pritzker and U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. Her entrance into the race also sets up another battle with Pritzker. With Durbin's support, Kelly has elected chair of the state Democratic Party in 2021 to replace Mike Madigan after the longtime party head bowed out of politics amid a then-ongoing federal investigation. Kelly beat Chicago Alderwoman Michelle Harris for the party leadership job, but her success was short-lived. Kelly ended her bid for re-election as party chair in 2022 after it became clear that she would not have enough support to beat State Representative Lisa Hernandez, a Democrat from Cicero. Pritzker supported Hernandez while Kelly continued to have Durbin's support. In 2026 primary, however, Durbin told reporters last month he likely won't endorse a candidate for his Senate seat in the primary. Durbin announced last month he will retire when his term ends in 2027, following 44 years in Congress. And there's a picture of U.S. State Representative Robin Kelly announcing her candidacy for state seat fellow Democrat Dick Durbin when he vacates. And continuing in our communities, an article from Urbana by Jana Wiersema about AFSCME Local 900. We just want a fair wage that allows us to pay our bills. County employees rally for better contract terms. Dismal, insulting, a slap in the face. Not fair, not enough. These are a few of the ways that Champaign County workers described the county's proposed contract for AFSCME employees when asked for their 2 cents by the News Gazette. The county employees are the ones who do everything, said Court Clerk Leslie Erdman. We make the county run. all the county programs. They are administered by us, the people who are standing here, and we've never been the priority. Workers represented by AFSCME rallied outside the courthouse at noon on Tuesday, prior to the afternoon bargaining session. We do the work that makes the county government happen, and in return we just want a fair wage that allows us to pay our bills, said Cecilia Phillips, AFSCME Council 31 Local 900 President and a deputy clerk in the circuit clerk's office. We make public service our priority. We need management to make us a priority, too. They can show us that with fair wage increases and affordable health insurance. Those two points were echoed by county employees who attended the rally. We've got people who have to work multiple jobs to maintain their expenses and still work full-time at the county, said David Best, an accountant in the auditor's office. It's just not right. While the county and AFSCME have yet to reach an agreement since their previous contract expired on December 31st, at least one thing is set in stone. Paid parental leave is being increased from 2 weeks to 12. Labor Committee Chair Emily Rodriguez said in a previous interview that this is a union proposal the county has committed to and must honor. Rodriguez told the News Gazette that Tuesday's session was the first time the county's bargaining team had heard from AFSCME negotiators since sharing their proposal in early April. We're pleased with the progress, she said, following the meeting. In addition to increased parental leave, the county's proposal for a 3-year contract also includes increasing the county's contribution to employee premiums for dependent health insurance coverage from $90 to $200 for spouse, $95 to $250 for children, and $100 to $300 for families. Passing a 5% decrease in health insurance premiums on to employees, and the addition of a floating holiday, increases to the AFSCME salary wage scale, 20 cents to the minimum for FY25 fiscal year, and 10 cents each for FY26 and 27. A 3% cost of living adjustment for fiscal year 2025, retroactive to January 1st, and 2% or same as non-bargaining employees, whichever is higher, for fiscal years 26 and 27. A scaling one-time bonus tied to years of service. Rodriguez said the proposed wages and cost of living increases reaffirm our commitment to a living wage by the county standard. Every budget director, every person on the finance committee, county board leadership, and our committee is telling me that we cannot afford any more increases to the cost of living offer that we've made, she said, and that scares them. Thinking about the future, if we were to add increases, the thought is that we already cannot afford this package that we're offering. Natalie Nagel, staff representative with AFSCME Council 31 Local 900, declined to discuss counterproposals outside of the bargaining room. These folks are standing up for a fair wage increase and affordable health care, she told the News Gazette. The county works because they do, and they deserve to be fairly compensated for that. And there's a picture of the protest there with Natalie Nagel, a staff representative with AFSCME Council 31 Local 900, as she speaks on a bullhorn in the union rally. County employees represented by the AFSCME called for fair wages and affordable health insurance at a rally, which took place at noon on Tuesday. And this is Lisa reading with you on Wednesday. We're going to wrap up our first half of the News Gazette for now, and I will be back to read with you shortly. Thank you.